Welcome, you guys. How's everyone doing? Good. So I'm willing to bet that all of us here in this room have been majorly blessed in our lives in some way or another, that we probably are still telling stories of times when we've been given really generous things by people, maybe unexpectedly, or had really generous events or opportunities happen in our lives. Maybe you were trying for years to get pregnant and you actually had a child. That baby probably feels like a blessing. Or maybe your family was stuck without a working vehicle and an empty bank account and someone gave you a car. I have quite a few friends who were given cars, which means I have a lot of poor friends with bad automobiles. But those things are huge blessings. They're gifts. I remember when I, just shortly after I graduated from college, I moved back to Duluth and began interning here at the church. And I was learning a lot about ministry and leadership. I was doing VLI, which is the Vineyard Leadership Institute. I was doing some graphic design, and I spent a lot of time being afraid of Michael. He was a scary boss for a while. I didn't need any equipment to be scared of Michael, but I really could have used a computer to write papers, do graphic design work, but I didn't have one. So I limped by borrowing other people's computers. And later in that year, this couple came to me and said that they had an almost new 30-some inch screen Apple desktop computer, and they wanted to give it to me. Give that to me. They said that they had been praying and asking God who it should belong to, and he told them me. I was flabbergasted at the kindness of Jesus and the generosity of these guys, and that I would get such a valuable gift. It was a blessing. When we get gifts like that, blessings that are big in our lives, it's sort of like Imodium AD for our generosity and serving system. Because left to our natural tendencies, we give in really constipated, stunted, and protected ways. We give to people we like, if it's convenient, and if they'll pay us back. But totally generous gifts, the stuff that is beyond what's our normal tendency and our normal system, it reminds us of a bigger scheme that we live in. And it reminds us of the way that Jesus gives. Because his system is way more radical than ours. And he dishes out blessing and gifts like he's the stinking Monopoly man or something. He's not really like that. But his way is so much more extreme than ours. And once in a while, you see a person that just has that part of Jesus ripping through them. And they stand out in the way that they bless and serve others in a radical way. And it's pretty amazing to see those people because you realize that they have embraced something way bigger than themselves. And it does what embracing a quality of Jesus always does. It changes the world. Harriet Tubman was one of those people. You guys remember Harriet Tubman from middle school book reports, or I don't know where else we would have learned about her. The Harriet Tubman of the Underground Railroad. She was born a slave in 1822 in Maryland. And for as long as she can remember, she loved Jesus. In all of her biographies I read about her, it said she couldn't remember a time in her life when she wasn't talking to Jesus, singing to him, worshiping him. And one man was quoted to say about her, "I never met with any person of any color who had more confidence in the voice of God as spoken directly to her soul. And her faith in a supreme power truly was great." Harriet's life with Jesus actually grew even greater after a horrific accident that she had when she was about 12. And the accident made her depend on Jesus even more. And what happened was she was heading out with her master and another slave to run errands. She got in the middle of a fight between the two. And intending to hit the other slave, her master threw a 2-pound weight that actually hit Harriet's head instead. Her skull split open, and she suffered a severe brain injury. And actually, for the rest of her life, she suffered sometimes multiple seizures every day. And because Harriet was a slave, there was no such thing as sick leave. So she bucked it up and continued working long days as a slave and just dealing with the interruptions of seizures as they came and went throughout her day. And her life carried on like that until she was 27 when the heroic story that we know about, this whole Underground Railroad thing, began unfolding in her life. But before I get into that juicy part of her story, I sort of want to step back and just talk a little bit about the bigger picture of this sermon series. Because as we talk about all these heroes of the faith, something that I want us to be careful not to do is to look at people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Mother Teresa and Harriet Tubman and think, I want to be like them. Because truly, these people had heroic things going on in their lives, and they reflect something really big and beautiful. But the thing that they're reflecting is Jesus. And it's my hope that we would see people like her and say to ourselves, because of her, I want to be more like Jesus. And it's my hope today that as we hear about her radical serving nature, the way that she gave so generously, that we would turn to Jesus and say, God, would you put some of that in me? Would we look more like you because of her story? So I'm going to pray for us that we would all get pieces of that, because I want it to. And then we'll jump in and yak about it all. So I'll pray for us. So Jesus, would you fill this room with your presence even more? And God, would you already begin just loosening up in us just the things that keep generosity from flowing, from keep us from serving and looking like you. And God, would you just permeate us with your presence, with the way that you love and give. We just invite you here, Jesus. Amen. Cool. So if you want to follow along in your Bible, I'm going to read a little snippet from Genesis. It's actually on page 8 in the Bibles in front of you. And I'm going to grab a story, just a small piece of another person's life in the Bible that really mirrors Harriet's life. And it's Genesis 12, 1 through 4. It goes like this. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse you. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he was sent out from Haran. So God is having this actual encounter with Abraham here. And it's just pretty exciting stuff when the God of the universe gets in personal contact with you. And here, Abraham is getting specific direction from God for his life. God's telling him to take your family and move out of this place to a new specific place I'm telling you to go. And these kind of encounters where God is interacting really personally with us, those kind of things aren't just unique to people like Abraham. All of the people in this sermon series had encounters with God. We're all invited to have encounters with God. And actually, we can learn to regularly press in to have encounters with him by doing things like hearing his voice and spending time in his presence, reading about him, pursuing getting to know him. It's an expected and essential part of following him to have encounters with Jesus. But sometimes we get stuck on the encountering part, because it's really, really nice to hear his voice and sit in his presence. And when we get into that place, we sometimes think, this is the complete picture. This is it. I could just stay here. And it is a really lovely and good thing. But the deal with encountering God is that it's never meant to stay about us. It's meant to change our relationship to others. Whenever we meet God as he really is, when who he is interacts with us personally, where he does things like challenge us and speak to us, direct us, transform us, heal us, whatever it was that we received from him, it's meant to go out of us and bless others. And this means that our consumer mentality that's naturally just running through our veins gets to turn into a giver's mentality. We go from what's in my life with God for me to what's in this for them. Like people around us, our city, our coworkers, our friends. And if we encounter God and we leave actually thinking more about ourselves or more swallowed up by self-pity or anger or insecurity, I would venture to guess we actually didn't meet with Jesus. Because every time we meet with the real Jesus, he makes us about others. Now, Abraham had a genuine encounter with God here. And what do we notice? Almost as soon as God starts talking to Abraham, God says, go. Go leave this place so that your life can be about others. He actually says to Abraham, so all people on earth will be blessed through you. If we are encountering Jesus, receiving from him, if we're getting mighty direction in our life, anything from Jesus, it's meant to come out of us and bless others. And we actually see the same pattern all throughout the Bible. You guys remember Paul in the New Testament? Before he was following Jesus, he was a Pharisee. He knew all about God. He was really into religion. He actually followed the same God that Abraham followed. And remember what happens to him in Acts 9? He's walking down a road. He gets blinded by this divine light. He hears a voice. The voice is Jesus, and he realizes Jesus is God. He calls Jesus master, and Jesus gives him specific direction to go meet with a guy named Ananias. Paul finds the guy. Ananias prays for him. Paul's miraculously healed of his blindness. And then what we see is that a couple days later, it says just a few days, Paul goes out and begins meeting with people and telling them about Jesus. He goes. He becomes about others. Remember Peter in the New Testament? In Luke, before Peter was really following Jesus, he's probably certainly heard about Jesus, maybe watched Jesus preach in the town, probably heard the buzz about Jesus. But in Luke 5, Peter comes in from a skunk night of fishing. He's a fisherman. He meets Jesus on the shore, and Jesus says, why don't you go out one more time and see what you can catch? And Peter's like, great idea. I've been out all night. That's a pretty dumb idea, but I guess I'll go out and give it a shot. And of course, we know he goes out, he throws out his net, and he gets so many fish that his net almost breaks. And what happens here is no small encounter for Peter, because he realizes that what just happened was that Jesus was revealing that he was something much bigger to Peter, that he was actually God in human skin. Because what does Peter do? He gets back to shore, he runs up to Jesus, and he falls at his feet. And he says, I get it. This is too much. I see who you really are. And then what does Jesus say? He says, good, I'm glad you get it, but let me give you a new job description. Come and learn to spend your life on people instead of fish. Let's go be about people. Become about others, Peter. And now we see the same thing in Harriet. As I said earlier, Harriet couldn't remember a time in her life when she wasn't hearing from Jesus and singing and praying to him. And actually, one of the favorite things I read about her in some of these books was that in her young life with God, she would worship him through her ordinary activities of being a slave. That would mean, like, for instance, she would be sweeping, and she said that she would say things and pray, God, would you sweep out the sin in my heart? Or she poured water in the animal troughs, Jesus, would you wash my heart clean? And she actually even prayed for her master, the man who would whip her. She prayed for him. Her encounters happened through a very ordinary, imprisoned life. She sought Jesus through her normal daily chores of being a slave. What would that look like for us to encounter Jesus in our normal, ordinary lives? And all of our lives are unique. We're all doing different things throughout the day. I mean, maybe you're into construction. And as you're building things, you begin talking to Jesus and asking him, Jesus, would you build in my life a character that looks like yours? Or maybe you stay home with your children and you get to spend time thanking Jesus for this great privilege of guiding these little people's lives. And at the same time, still thinking about your Heavenly Father who's still guiding and shaping your own life. Or maybe you work with data and numbers and you ask Jesus, with all the data that makes up my life, would you line it up to look like yours And would you show me where there's any error in my data, to use all those fancy techie terms? That Jesus could use whatever we are up to, whatever we are spending our time with, and start infusing his encounters with us right then and there. Because our encounters with Jesus truly have to happen in the ordinary. Because these are the lives that we live. This is the time that we get to have to spend meeting with him. And it prepares us for the bigger things that he wants to say and do to us. And some bigger things did start happening with Harriet. In her 20s, she began having a reoccurring dream that she was flying like a bird away from the plantation over trees, fields, towns, rivers, to the north, where there was freedom for slaves. And always in her dream, there was a team of white women helping her get there. In 1849, at age 27, after years of having this dream, buzz around the plantation was that Harriet was to be sold to a chain gang, which was bad news because it meant she would never see her family again, and the working conditions were atrocious, even for a slave standards. So Harriet began to pray that God would change her master's heart, that he would begin following Jesus, that he would have kindness towards her, that he wouldn't sell her and have mercy for her and her family. But buyers kept showing up on the plantation and checking out Harriet like a head of cattle. And as tension increased, as it seemed more and more likely that she was going to be sold, Harriet began changing her prayers. In her own words, she said she began praying this: "Oh Lord, if you ain't ever going to change this man's heart, kill him, Lord, and take him out of the way." She was a tough cookie. And actually, 6 days later, her master fell dead at age 47. Yeah. She was shocked, and she actually felt a little guilty, like she had caused it. But she knew God was doing something. And not too many months later, taking the opportunity of her master's death and knowing that her future master probably would sell her, Harriet set out on foot, night by night, walking to Philadelphia. And she did this despite being alone, despite slave hunters, being illiterate, having a brain injury, having uncontrollable fits of epilepsy. And she did this with the help of a network of people that aided runaway slaves along the way. And here's the kicker. This is where she had a wild encounter with God again. Many of the people who helped her along the way were women from her dream. Yeah, it was pretty cool. So when she arrived in Philadelphia, she's quoted to have said, "I looked at my hands to see if I was the same person. Now I was free. There was such a glory over everything. The sun came like gold through the trees and over the fields, and I felt like I was in heaven." Do you see what happened there? Harriet had a number of very real experiences with Jesus. He spoke to her. He provided a way for freedom for her life. He got her there. She knew that God was personally interacting with her life. And here's where we see the same pattern emerge from Harriet's life that we saw in Peter and Paul and Abraham and Isaiah and Lydia and Moses and the woman at the well, and really a whole bunch of people in the Bible, this pattern of being blessed to bless others. Because as soon as she got to the north, she immediately began thinking this: because I was free, they should be free. Meaning the slaves that she left behind in the plantation. You see, with all that blessing welling up in Harriet, it was already turning around wanting to bless others. It was just the nature of Jesus coming out and wanting to give away what he had given her. And then, of course, we know that she went back to Maryland 19 more times by foot to bring back with her over 300 slaves all the way back to Canada and New York. But maybe what you didn't know was that Harriet also served in the Civil War for 4 years as a spy and a scout, which no other woman had done that at that point. They actually called her General Tubman, which I think is awesome because she was like 5 feet tall and is just this strong woman. And after the war, she lived the rest of her life until she was 93 when she died, running a home for old and disabled freed slaves. And we might say living a life like that is an extreme example, that that's an extreme way of blessing others. I would say, yeah, it is, and no, it isn't. Yes, because Harriet's life made marks in history. We still read about her. We have books about her. But you see, God made a very big mark on her. And that same principle is the same thing working for all of us. Everyone who meets God loses more and more of the consumer mentality and is compelled to go and risk more and more. We end up being willing to do whatever it takes to serve people and to meet needs as a representative of Jesus. God will not bless us except to be a blessing to others. And what I don't mean to say is that to be a good Christian, we all need to go out and volunteer and serve and spend all of our time doing these things so that we look like we're doing the right stuff. That's just religion. That's just being about what the externals look like when really our hearts could stay stingy. But that's why point number one is point number one. As we encounter Jesus and his love for us, it actually lets us follow through on the blessing part. Because what's happening on the outside, what we give away, is fed by what's being poured in on the inside. As Jesus' love meets us in here, we can do wild things on the outside. So the solution is actually not to do more stuff or to sign up for more things, but to go back to the source, which is Jesus, the creator of blessing, and learn to receive from him and learn to let his love come into us and ask him to make a difference in our life. So now practically, there's something we need to know if we want to do this blessing thing. We can't be a blessing to others unless we're willing to lose stuff. Did you see Abraham, for example? When he was told to leave that place and go to this new town where he could bless people, did you see all the things he had to lose? He had to lose his home, his community, his family, friends, safety, comfort. The easiness of not relocating your herd and your family and all your stuff. And Harriet lost too. That's why I call this message the big loser, Harriet Tubman. Wasn't like she was in a weight loss challenge. She lost a lot of things. When she moved to the north, she got jobs cleaning and cooking, where she would work long days. She would save all the money that she could, then quit her jobs and disappear for a couple months. That's when she would go back down south to grab a group of slaves, and along the way, she would pay for their clothing, food, and housing along the way. She put herself in incredible danger. The bounty for Harriet Tubman was high, $40,000, which was huge back then. She walked over 7,000 miles in harsh conditions, sometimes hiding in icy rivers and carrying drugged babies in baskets so that they wouldn't make noise. And listen to this. As she served in the Civil War, she refused government compensation because she didn't want the recently freed slaves to think she got special treatment. So her days in the war looked like this. She would get up early, take care of wounded and infected soldiers until late in the evening. She'd go back to her cabin, and she would bake 50 pies, pans of gingerbread, and 2 casks of root beer every night. And those things would be sold the next day to support her. And her retirement was opening up her house to old and disabled slaves who were now free and couldn't take care of themselves. And she lived like that until she died. What allowed her to spend her life like that? When confronted about her dangerous escapades, she used to say, "The Lord will take care of me till my time comes, and then I'll be ready to go." The God she trusted modeled the same risk and generosity. She was loved by a God who laid down his life for her, down to his very heartbeat, and then would gently prod her and say, "Now you do it, Harriet. You see those people, those slaves at that plantation? Now you go back and spend your life on them. Go lay down your life for those people." And she lost herself so that he could bless others through her. Do you guys know that there are families moving to Duluth to learn how to plant churches? Like families who are picking up their families and leaving homes, jobs, community, friends, and coming to Duluth to learn how to plant churches. And do you know what their lives are going to be like when they actually start these churches? They're going to work 40-hour jobs alongside the work of starting a church. They're going to lose all their weekends and free time. They're going to open their own wallets to pay for the church needs because no one else will be there to pay for it. They are going to spend their lives on communities that will bring people into meeting Jesus for the first time. They're signing up to spend their lives. Do you know the needs of your neighborhood, of your office people, of your families, of your friends around you, let alone the needs of the world? Jesus is asking us to lay down our lives for these people. And I can promise it's going to get uncomfortable. People are going to ask us to help them move on our only day off. And people will need a place to live, and it's going to be our spare bedroom. And he might ask us to go to night school on top of our full-time job because he wants to train us to do a job. And he may ask you to fly halfway around the world and pay $20,000 to adopt a kid. He's going to want to spend us. And he's going to spend money, comfort, family, reputation, status, free time, our weekends, being able to have the liberty of choosing our own friends or choosing the neighborhoods we want to live in or choosing the kind of cars or things that we own, our vacation time, our extra money, our sleep. He's going to want to spend those things in us. And really, these are the things we can expect to lose if we want to grab the opportunity to seriously bless others. Can you guys feel that Imodium AD kicking in? What if we were so open-handed with our stuff, with our resources, that Jesus could change the world through us by radically blessing others, through people like us who would say, I will let it cost whatever it needs to cost. Now, before I freak you out about thinking we're going to lose everything, let me give you a little positive push here too. Notice when God is talking to Abraham here in this Genesis passage, he also says, I will bless you, Abraham. When you bless others, I will bless you. And he's saying the same thing to us. As you bless others, I'll bless you. And this isn't some like weird incentive or a manipulative push to try to get us to give things. But it has something to do with what Jesus is talking about in John 17. Here Jesus is praying to the Father, and he's asking the Father to send us to bless others just like he sent Jesus. And just a few verses earlier, in verse 13, Jesus asks the Father that he would allow us to experience the complete joy in blessing others that Jesus had in laying down his life. Why does Jesus ask this? Why does he correlate complete joy with laying down his life for people? Contrary to what we believe, there is incredible joy in serving something much bigger than ourselves and having something that will actually change the world around us. And there is incredible joy in serving something bigger than our own self-interests. Because there's a deep fear, if we're honest, that runs through all of us that thinks if we actually give to the extent that we're talking about here, our quality of life will decrease, will run out, will be taken advantage of, will be exploited, our life will get worse. But what Jesus models and says, and Harriet Tubman models, is that there is more joy in laying down your life for others than there is for laying down your life for the totem pole at work, for serving your reputation, for wallowing in pain, for serving your hunt for a husband or wife, for false serving, which is serving so that others will love you, for serving so that you feel right or proud, or managing how much you can give. This kind of joy is an internal blessing. And it's an awareness that everything we have, all of our resources, actually belong to the Father. And that he has plenty, and he's not a stingy father, that he has plenty to give to us and all the people around us. And as we encounter that truth more and more, as it gets in our bellies and we actually believe it, we can start losing major things in our life because it doesn't belong to us. And we can start serving awesomely in radical ways. And Jesus knows this because he was the ultimate loser. He lost everything, and yet he had complete joy. When this kind of internal blessing is happening in us, we can be okay no matter what happens with our stuff. We can be okay if the things we lose never come back to us, if the people never say thank you, or if we suffer because of it. When we can trust that all of this belongs to Jesus anyways, sharing becomes more attractive than ownership. I gotta tell you a few stories of people who have totally embraced this stuff, where it's so goofy and so insane in their lives, but somehow has become fun. The first story is about a guy named Thomas Garrett, and he actually was one of the stops on the way of the Underground Railroad. Harriet would bring her people to his house. They were buddies. But he opened up his house to many different slaves coming through, and actually he had 3,000 slaves stay in his house over the course of his life. Thomas Garrett was a Quaker, and he also was a shoe salesman. And one of the ways that he blessed the slaves coming through is that every slave that left with a new pair of shoes. And sometimes it was their first pair of shoes. And that was a lot of shoes, 3,000, or I guess 6,000 shoes, assuming they all had 2 feet. But eventually, Thomas got busted for aiding fugitive slaves, which is illegal. And the first time he got tried in court, he was fined so heavily that he lost everything. He lost his business, his home, and all of his possessions. And at age 60, when the court case happened, he had to go back to work and rebuild the whole thing. And he managed to do it. He rebuilt the business. He got his home back. He got some of his things, but all along he kept housing slaves, and he got busted one more time. And this time he was fined just as heavily. He lost everything again. And this is the cool thing. I love this so much. At his second sentence, after the trial had just been sentenced or whatever, they made their decision, he lost it all. He stood up in the courtroom and he said this: "The judge, he hasn't left me a dollar. But I wish to say to thee and to all in this room that if anyone knows of a fugitive who wants a shelter and a friend, send him to Thomas Garrett and he will befriend him." You see what he just did here? He stood up amongst the people who just fined him everything he owned for the second time and said, "And by the way, if you know any slaves, tell them my house is open. I'll lose it all a third time." I love that. There was a joy that was much deeper in Thomas and a detachment of his stuff that allowed him to be crazy in serving. A second story is from a website called I Like Giving, which is a really cool website just about generosity and the giving of Jesus. It's a video about a woman named Catherine. Catherine is an immigrant from Africa. She's single, she works at a bakery, and she's in need of major car repairs. She begins saving up money to fix her car, and she's saving and saving when one day a woman comes into the bakery. Catherine meets her and discovers that this woman's needs are way bigger than Catherine's. And Catherine feels like Jesus tells her to give the money to this lady. So Catherine goes and empties her car fund account and gives the woman her $5,000. And some people in town who know Catherine hear about what happened, and they start wondering, could we do something to help Catherine with her car situation? So a wife talks to her husband and says, could we maybe buy a car for her? And they decide that they're going to do it. They show up at a dealership. They talk to a salesman, and the salesman asks, used or new? And right away, the answer, used. Used is good enough. It's just a gift. We'll go with a used car. But then something hits them. And it's the radical generosity of Jesus. And they say, wait, let's get a new car. And this is what happens next.
He asked me, if you were to buy a car, what kind of a car would you like? I said, Debbie, I'm not really planning to buy a car. But she said, oh, just tell me.
And she said, I'd like a SUV, cruise control. And she said, I'd like a light color. And we called Scott. And he said, I think I've got the perfect car. So Pete said, can we deliver it tomorrow? So we have the bread company owner and his family, Scott and his family, and our family. And Catherine sees us all coming in, and she's just all excited to see everyone.
And I went to give them hugs, and I said, what's Pete doing here? I did have the biggest idea. When I went out,
and so we walked her over to the car. We said, Catherine, this is your new car.
So, I said, for me, this is for me. He said, well, I knew God had many cars, but I didn't know he had a new one for me. So, God had new cars for me?
We all stood there in tears as we saw the joy on Catherine's face, and we got to be a part of it. And the joy of that was unbelievable.
It felt so right. It was such an excitement to drive it.
We told Catherine that we would like this to be confidential. But I kept running into people who would say, I heard what you did for Catherine. It wasn't even us, it was Catherine. It all started with Catherine giving of what she had to a widow to help her, and it just continues on. Generosity begets generosity.
We don't give in order to receive. We give because it's the nature of Jesus Christ. He gave us his life. So we have the DNA of Jesus Christ of giving. Yeah, so this is one story I will never forget in my life.
That's good stuff, isn't it? So our God is in the business of doing this stuff, of freeing us, of rescuing us, of giving really radically. And we somehow get to be people who receive it and give it away.